There's a lot of heartbreak associated with this departure. We did not get everybody out that we wanted to get out.
The U.S. military drawdown from Afghanistan is complete. It's Wednesday, September 1st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a declaration America's mission is not over in Afghanistan. Hurricane Ida floods small Louisiana communities. UN vows to remain in Afghanistan. Afghan refugee pessimistic about homeland's future. Disabled adults are making a difference in the workplace. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden delivered an address from the White House on Tuesday afternoon following the withdrawal of the last American troops from Afghanistan, marking the end of a nearly two-decade war that leaves the Taliban in power. President Biden spoke about his decision not to extend the U.S. troop presence in Kabul beyond the August 31st deadline.
So we're left with a simple decision. Either follow through on the commitment made by the last administration and leave Afghanistan, or say we weren't leaving and commit another tens of thousands more troops going back to war. That was the choice, the real choice, between leaving or escalating. I was not going to extend this forever war, and I was not extending a forever exit.
Mr. Biden also spoke about the freedom to leave Afghanistan for those who remain.
Freedom of travel, freedom to leave. And together, we are joined by over 100 countries that are determined to make sure the Taliban upholds those commitments. It will include ongoing efforts in Afghanistan to reopen the airport, as well as overland routes, allowing for continued departure to those who want to leave, and deliver humanitarian assistance to the people of Afghanistan. The Taliban has made public commitments, broadcast on television and radio across Afghanistan, on safe passage for anyone wanting to leave, including those who worked alongside Americans. We don't take them by their word alone, but by their actions. And we have leverage to make sure those commitments are met.
President Biden's decision to stick to the withdrawal deadline he set drew criticism from political opponents and from some allies. The U.S. and its Western allies invaded the war-torn South Asian country nearly 20 years ago and removed the Taliban from power for allowing the Al-Qaeda terror network to organize the September 11, 2001 attacks on America. The Taliban on Tuesday celebrated the departure of U.S.-led foreign forces. More than 123,000 people were evacuated by the U.S. military and coalition forces, according to U.S. officials. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more on the exit from Afghanistan.
This is the last U.S. service member leaving Afghanistan, ending America's longest war.
The military mission is over. A new diplomatic mission has begun.
The Taliban, ousted by the U.S. in 2001, now celebrating with gunfire in the streets, with the general overseeing the withdrawal speaking soberly to Pentagon reporters.
There's a lot of heartbreak associated with this departure. We did not get everybody out that we wanted to get out.
The U.S. has moved its diplomatic mission to Qatar and is vowing to help those left behind depart in the coming days, about 250 Americans and countless Afghans who helped America's cause.
Many are still there. Our commitment to them has no deadline.
The total casualties during the evacuation remain unclear, including Afghans killed in the initial evacuation chaos, 13 U.S. service members and more than 100 Afghans killed in an Islamic State attack Thursday, and more Afghans killed Sunday in subsequent explosions after the U.S. military blew up a suspected Islamic State vehicle-borne bomb.
A day or a week where you lose 13 service members is the worst day or the worst week of your presidency.
White House spokesperson Jen Psaki said the president stands by his decision to withdraw. About 2,400 service members died in Afghanistan during the 20 years of war. The U.S. killed al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden and prevented al-Qaeda terrorists from launching another attack against the American homeland. But it ultimately failed to build a government and military capable of defeating the Taliban, causing many Americans to fear that the gains made by several Afghan groups, such as women and girls, could be lost, and the lives of those who aided Americans could now be in jeopardy. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. U.S. climate envoy in Japan to push efforts to cut emissions. EU to meet to discuss preventing uncontrolled migration from Afghanistan. Pakistan says 11 ISIS militants killed in raid. Bangladesh sentences 6 militants to death for killing gay activists. Taliban warn against future invasions of Afghanistan, seek global legitimacy. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Deportation centers in Turkey are filled to capacity as refugees from Afghanistan continue to cross the border from Iran by night, hoping to evade police and resettle. As VOA tours a deportation center in Van, officials say they are not sending people back to Afghanistan, but they also have no plans to release detainees. VOA's Heather Murdoch has this report from Van and the Turkish border with Iran.
Refugees from Afghanistan say crossing this border from Iran to Turkey is a chance at freedom and safety after weeks or months of grueling travel from Afghanistan. But once they get across, many go into hiding, hoping to evade police and deportation. Those who are caught are often held in deportation camps. Many are children.
I was running from police and I fell in a deep ditch and broke my leg.
Turkish authorities take us on a tour of a deportation camp not far from the border. They say their goal is to prevent more refugees from entering Turkey to seek asylum, but they also want us to witness what appears to be generally humane treatment.
There are 126 rooms in this facility, all meeting international quality standards.
Officials say 80% of the people detained in this facility are from Afghanistan and they cannot be deported to their home country for logistical and humanitarian reasons. Earlier this month, the Taliban swept into Kabul after taking over vast swaths of Afghanistan in a matter of days. Since then, mass evacuations have left the Kabul airport in chaos, and Islamic State suicide bombers have killed at least 170 Afghan people and 13 U.S. service members. Now the country is on edge, waiting to find out what happens after the U.S. met its avowed August 31st deadline to pull out of Afghanistan completely. Officials say maybe next week or next month they can formulate a plan beyond resettling refugees in a third country, which is often impossible. Families say, despite their uncertain future in Turkey or beyond, they had no choice but to leave.
It was war. Everything was deteriorating. We had to go.
Turkey hosts more than 4 million refugees and asylum seekers, more than any other country in the world. Many Turkish people say the refugee population is a strain on their economy. Soldiers say they are working hard to keep the refugees out. The government says it is not forcing people back across this border to Iran. But many refugees say they have entered Turkey and been forced back out many times. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Van and the Turkish border with Iran.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, Hurricane Ida does serious damage to power grid, leaves hundreds trapped. Happening now in Asia, China is taking dramatic steps to prevent teenagers from becoming addicted to video games. In new rules published Monday by China's National Press and Publication Administration, which oversees the nation's gaming market, teens under 18 years of age will be limited to playing games 3 hours per week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us on VOA Asia. New Orleans largely escaped catastrophic flooding during Hurricane Ida, but nearby communities were not so lucky. In La Place, a western suburb where work is not complete on a levee, many people had to be rescued from floodwaters. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards said Monday that local, state, and federal boats, high water vehicles, and aircraft rescued 671 people. New Orleans' expensive levee system held up against Ida's rampage. Utility crews from several states arrived in Louisiana to help restore service to more than 1 million customers in Louisiana and Mississippi, including all of New Orleans. VOA's Jeff Custer has more on the impact of the powerful storm.
As recently as a few days ago, Ida was just a tropical depression hundreds of kilometers south of Cuba. But it came ashore Sunday in the southern state of Louisiana as a life-threatening Category 4 hurricane. The storm's winds peaked at more than 241 kilometers per hour, knocking down trees, taking off roofs, and taking out power lines. The damage to Louisiana's electrical grid was extensive, with power out in the entire city of New Orleans overnight. U.S. President Joe Biden spoke about the storm Monday.
We're in close contact with local electric providers to see what they need. They're all private providers. We don't control that, but we're doing all we can to minimize the amount of time it's going to take to get power back up for everyone in the region.
More than 1 million electric customers in Louisiana were without power Monday. Utility companies say electricity may not be fully restored for several days and even weeks. New Orleans saw property damage and downed trees from the storm's winds, but the city was spared the severe flooding it saw from Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Area residents could not help but compare the two storms.
How was it for this one here? Not nowhere near like Katrina. But it could have been if it would have hit here. I think it hit home instead. Home of Louisiana.
In a statement, a spokesman for the Port of New Orleans said in their initial assessment they found no major damage to commercial facilities following the hurricane. Other parts of the region may not be so fortunate. The heavy rains and storm surge associated with Ida flooded several rural areas of Louisiana and Mississippi. A Houston-based volunteer group, Crowdsource Rescue, says as of early Monday, it had rescued as many as 150 people trapped in their homes due to flooding. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. China's defense ministry has protested the passage of a U.S. Navy warship and Coast Guard cutter through the waters between China and Taiwan, a self-governing island claimed by China. A statement posted on the ministry's website called the move provocative. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues with the departure of international troops from Afghanistan. UN agencies pledged to remain in the beleaguered country and assist millions of people, many of whom are internally displaced. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Taliban now is in charge of the country, but there is no centralized government in place. UN agencies say that is problematic. However, they note they've been talking with the Taliban and other groups for decades about accessing people in need. Spokesman for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Jens Laerke, says he believes that experience will allow aid agencies to gain the necessary acceptance to carry out their life-saving operations.
The armies have left, but the UN is staying, and we are committed to stay. And that's what we have said from the beginning, and that's what we are doing. Just to remind you that we have already delivered humanitarian aid to some 8 million people this year alone. So I think that is simply a number that demonstrates that we are there to stay.
The United Nations aims to assist 16 million people this year, including 3.5 million people forcibly uprooted from their homes by conflict. However, it acknowledges that may not be possible, as it has received only 39% of the $1.3 billion humanitarian appeal. The World Health Organization succeeded in flying in 12.5 tons of medical supplies into the Mazar-e-Sharif airport in Afghanistan Monday. WHO spokeswoman Margaret Harris says much more is needed. She says the WHO is planning two further airlifts this week from the WHO's logistics hub in Dubai and is exploring other options to get more shipments into the country. She says the WHO is concerned that many non-governmental organizations are forced to scale down operations and close health facilities for lack of money. That, she says, is depriving millions of Afghans of necessary primary and secondary health care.
The range of services that will be impacted include immunization for children, antenatal care, postnatal care, and child delivery for pregnant women. Malnutrition care and COVID treatment centres and other essential health services will also be affected. It's estimated that the closure of every 50 health facilities could lead to the death of 5 more women and 58 more children under 5 years of age every day.
Aid agencies say they fear the tragedy that has been unfolding in Afghanistan will no longer be visible now that the airlifts out of Kabul have ended. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi warns a far greater humanitarian crisis is just beginning. He is urging nations to keep their borders open to Afghans fleeing persecution and conflict and who need international protection. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, the parents and brother of an American journalist who has been detained in Myanmar for 100 days vowed on Tuesday to never stop working to secure his release. Danny Fenster, 37, is managing editor of Frontier Myanmar, an independent online news outlet based in Yangon, the Southeast Asian nation's largest city. He was detained on May 24th while trying to board a flight to visit his family who live in the Detroit area and is being held in a prison in Yangon. During a news conference held via Zoom, his father, Buddy Fenster, said, "We're just trying to stay tough as Danny is, and we're not going to stop until we bring him home." Myanmar's military-installed government accuses Fenster of incitement, saying he spread false or inflammatory information. If convicted, Fenster could be imprisoned for up to 3 years. Fenster's next hearing is scheduled for next week, according to his brother, Brian Fenster. Making headlines in Asia, Asia's tourist destinations are looking to domestic visitors to get them through the COVID-19 pandemic's second year. Across the Asia-Pacific region, international tourist arrivals were down 95% in the first 5 months of the year, according to the UN World Tourism Organization. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Najia Hashimzadeh worked with various U.S. agencies in Afghanistan for women's rights before applying for a special immigrant visa. She says she left Afghanistan because she was on the Taliban's hit list. She spoke with VOA's Saki Bul Islam about the situation in Afghanistan, the SIV process, her life in America, and her expectations from the Taliban.
I want to share my feeling.
This is how Najia Hashimzadeh reacted to the situation in Afghanistan.
With my family and with all people in Afghanistan, I wanted to tell my people, my family, my...
She couldn't control her emotions as she talked about the people left behind in Afghanistan.
First, I want to pray for everybody who is in Afghanistan to be safe. I miss everybody. I miss my country. Then I'm so disappointed because we don't expect that the international community they leave Afghanistan so easily. And even we didn't expect this from our government or from our president, basically, to leave Afghanistan like that and put the people in a situation which is so disappointed.
She says she fears for the lives of her family now that the Taliban are in control. The Taliban have said they will respect the rights of religious minorities and women. When they ruled from 1996 to 2001, however, women were mostly barred from working or studying.
So now when Taliban came, they said they are different people. Do you believe that?
No. Just I'm thinking that they are waiting for the international communities to leave Afghanistan, basically American troops. The experience I have from the last time, I'm sure that they will repeat that again. Because they don't trust in peace, they don't trust on women's rights, they don't trust on human rights. I'm not sure that they are not changed, actually. The things that they say, I don't believe them.
She says she applied for special immigrant visa status because she was on Taliban's hit list because of her work for women. And she knew that if the Taliban took over again, women's lives would be in danger.
Not only me, the other employees that they were working with, the organization that they were eligible for SIV, everybody applied and they wanted to camp and to stay in a country that to have a better life and stay in a peaceful situation.
Applying for special immigrant visa status was not easy. She was denied once before being approved last year.
The requirement was to have like 2 years working of background with USAID projects in Afghanistan, and also a recommendation letter, and also a threat letter that showed that your life is under threat in the country.
At that time, she couldn't apply for special immigrant visa status for her family. But now that her family is eligible, she is trying to bring them here.
Because you know that the main target of the Taliban is not only now, but even in the past, it was American and those working with them with American projects. And now they are, as I hear the news, and they want to start searching door by door if they recognize that my family, that I'm here and I'm living in the United States and my family is back home. And definitely it will be a problem for my family as well.
That's why she does not want to disclose the names and location of her immediate family members in Afghanistan. And as she settles in her new life in America, all by herself, she is trying to help those left behind. Saqib al-Islam, VOA News, Alexandria.
In the U.S., disabled adults are gaining independence through programs that teach the skills they need to enter the workforce. VOA's Mike O'Sullivan met two employees in Los Angeles who have found meaningful work and say it has made a difference in their lives. He has much more in the following story.
31-year-old Melissa Baugas prepares ingredients for ice cream. Baugas has Down syndrome, a genetic disorder, but leads a busy life and works part-time at this popular ice cream shop in Long Beach, California. 46-year-old Larry Robbins works at a social service organization, the California Abilities Network, or ICANN, where both he and Baugas are clients. The social service charity recently opened a new facility in suburban Los Angeles.
I work here as cleaning, as a janitor for ICANN facility.
Both earn $15 an hour under a program supported by local businesses and the state of California. Both also take part in group activities with friends, each with a special need.
It could be somebody with autism, Down syndrome. It could be somebody with cerebral palsy.
Or people with other developmental or physical disabilities. Each gets a tailored program.
And then we asking them that question, you know, what is it that you can do? What is it you want to achieve in your life?
For Baugas, part of the dream was finding work that she enjoys, and she did that.
It's what I find. It's easy. It's not hard. It's easy.
There are parts of the job at the ice cream shop that she especially loves.
Getting her tips, getting her paycheck, getting her ice cream at the end of the day.
Her manager says she has brightened the workplace.
We thought we could help a young adult in this situation, but what we found out is that she's helped us and she's helped our business tremendously. She's been beyond infectious with enthusiasm.
Friends say the same about Robbins and his contagious smile. Baugas's mom says their experience sends a message.
I think despite what your disability is, you can find a place where you fit in and where you belong and where you can achieve.
And lead a fulfilling life. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Chris Cascale, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Please stay safe and make it a good day.